afternoon, and it is 1 p.m. I'm going to call the February 23rd, 2021 meeting of the House Taxes Committee to order under remote hearing rules 10.01. I want to inform the public that if you want to get a hold of any of the information that we have as members here and those before the committee today, just go, the best way is to go onto the website, get onto the Minnesota House of Representatives, go to committees, then go to taxes, and off to the right-hand side, right on the home page of the Committee on Taxes, you'll find all the information you need. So with that, Ms. Griska, I'm going to ask you if you would please call the roll.
Mark Hort.
Present.
Mark Hort, present. Liz Lagarde.
Liz Lagarde, present.
Liz Lagarde, present. Davids.
Davids, present.
Davids, present. Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Carlson, present. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo.
Garofalo, present.
Garofalo, present. Gomez.
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Her. Her. Hertas. Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. McDonald.
McDonald, present.
McDonald, present. Miller.
Present.
Miller, present. Moran.
Present.
Moran, present. Mortensen.
Present.
Mortensen, present. Robbins.
Present.
Robbins, present. Sundell.
Present.
Sundell, present. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz, present. Stevenson.
Present.
Stevenson, present. Swadzinski. Swazinski. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim, present. Her. Swazinski. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Griska. The committee has a quorum. Representative Les Lagarde, are you available to move the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Les Lagarde moves approval of the February 18th, 2021 minutes of the Taxes Committee. Any thoughts or comments on those minutes? Seeing none, I would ask you to temporarily unmute yourself as I call for the vote. All those in favor of the February 18th, 2021 or to approve, please say aye.
Aye.
The polls say nay. The motion does prevail. The February 18th, 2021 minutes of the Taxes Committee are approved. I also want to refer you to the February 22nd referral to the Property Tax Division. So you should have that. First bill up is House File 724. Representative Joachim, would you care to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd care to move my bill before the Tax Committee.
All right, Representative Joachim moves House File 724. Please begin. Welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members for hearing House File 724. This bill removes a sunset on the historic tax credit. The historic tax credit is not only a stabilizing force in saving historic buildings that define the unique character of communities across our state. It creates jobs, increases property values, and spurs economic development as well. And when used, its impact can reach well beyond the city's borders. For example, the construction workforce that was employed on the historic tax credit projects that took place in recent years in Minneapolis and St. Paul proper had crews coming from throughout the greater 15-county metropolitan area. The historic tax credit creates opportunities for small business entrepreneurship and development, as well as results in new employment opportunities in completed buildings. Another interesting fact that I did not realize until I authored this bill was when you build a new building, the majority of the cost is spent on materials, while when you rehabilitate a building, the majority of the cost is spent on labor. And this labor can touch up to 97% of Minnesota's industries. You're going to hear some statistics from testifiers, but I would like to share a few notable ones. In the last 10 years that this credit, tax credit has been used, there have been over 130 projects that have created 18,650 jobs, with developers investing $1.9 billion in these projects that have generated $3 billion for Minnesota's economy. In 2020 alone, according to the University of Minnesota Extension report, there were 11 projects that generated $49.8 million in labor income, supported 720 jobs, and when completed, those 11 projects in 2020 alone will generate an estimated $5.5 million in state and local tax receipts. This report crunched the numbers even further, and the bottom line is, for every dollar invested in this credit, there is a $9.52 of economic industry created in Minnesota. I would encourage anyone that has further questions on the credit to take a look at this report, and I'm sorry I should have done this earlier, but I'll make sure that we send the link out to it. Finally, because the historic tax credit must be paired with the use of the federal historic tax credit, these projects bring in federal financial resources that wouldn't otherwise be able to be used. Many of these projects would not get off the ground without this tax credit. I have a few testifiers here today to walk through the bill and explain the benefits of extending the sunset or repealing it. They will each only take a few minutes, but first I want to note the letters of support that you have been included in your electronic packets from the Minnesota Realtors, Metro Cities, and the League of Minnesota Cities. And we will be starting out with a brief video clip and then move on to the testifiers that we have today. So I guess I could say, go ahead and roll the clip.
Very good. That sounds good, Chair Joachim. And so before we go to our first testifier, if we could roll the video clip.
Yes, one moment.
There's only a small area of downtown Ely that really has that historical small town feel as you drive through before it sort of opens up again. You start at Central Avenue coming into town, and then you get to the top of the hill, and this theater and the Marquee are right there. They're what draw you in. And for a lot of years, driving by the Marquee was a little sad. You know, you knew it wasn't going to be lit up. And I think pretty much everyone in town who grew up here has a story of sitting in this theater, having rain fall on their head, having a ceiling tile fall on them, having a chair break while they were sitting in it.
Particularly if it was raining, you had to be careful because it was also dripping down on you and it would be running down the aisles. The theater was just in very, very poor condition. I had owned a business on this block actually since 1998 and had seen the block kind of go quiet after the theater closed in 2007. I think the community as a whole took it pretty hard. We always want our storefronts open. I mean, a town, in order to be alive and functioning, you need your stores occupied and open.
There are so many reasons to preserve historic structures. If you take a certain amount of money and you build a new building with it, you will spend most of your money on materials. If you take that same amount of money and spend it on restoration, you will spend a lot of your money on labor. So the labor will stimulate your local economy, whether it's your local tradesmen and workmen, or whether you actually get people from the outside who come in and stay in your hotels and restaurants.
When you drive by and you see local plumbers, local electricians, you recognize all the trucks, you know that's a good thing. To match the existing details, to take it that extra mile and use the original woodwork, doing that was a really big deal, and I think kept the heart and character of a project like this that'll last a lot longer than a complete overhaul not being true to any of those details.
There were buildings that were built in the 20s and 30s that will never be duplicated again. No one will put that kind of craftsmanship and style and materials into a building because it's just too expensive.
In these smaller communities, it means so much more because it can be the economic driver behind revitalizing the whole downtown area, for example.
Having this restoration project in itself was a boon to Ely, but now with the new layout and the additional space that's been opened up in the building next door, it will be very, very useful for upcoming events.
All right, thank you. And so it looks like our first testifier is Heidi Swank, and then David Ybarra is on deck. Ms. Swank, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Heidi Swank, and I am the new executive director at Rethos, an organization that's committed to rehabilitating and reimagining historic spaces across our state. I'm here to speak about HF 724, a bill to extend the sunset on Minnesota's Historic Structures Rehabilitation Tax Credit, otherwise known as the Minnesota Historic Tax Credit. Since 2010, the tax credit has generated over $3.5 billion in economic activity across 140 completed tax credit projects. This has provided important leverage in funding public services through increased property taxes and adding buildings back onto the tax rolls. As a brief history, the State Historic Tax Credit was originally passed in 2010 through a bipartisan effort in order to address the many job losses we experienced during the Great Recession. At that time, the bill, as initially passed, was sunsetted in 2015, but in 2013, the sunset date was then extended to 2021. The State Historic Tax Credit mirrors the Federal Historic Tax Credit, and when used in conjunction, they provide vital funding to projects that might have had trouble procuring funding elsewhere. Prior to the state's tax credit passing in 2010, we were seeing maybe 2 to 3 Federal Historic Tax Credit projects per year. And now with the State Historic Tax Credit that you can pair it with, those numbers have increased to 10 to 15 per year. We are now at another critical juncture as we emerge from the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic, particularly in addressing the disparities in job losses throughout our state. During challenging economic times, communities of color are disproportionately affected. In fact, in the past year, unemployment has increased only 0.2 for white workers in Minnesota, but among Black workers, that change was 6.5%. We're in need of tools that will provide well-paid jobs across the state, and this program has proven to do so. Supporting HF 724 will directly impact jobs and economic development across Minnesota, providing a way forward to begin recovery and to support our economy. So as the chair mentioned, our next speaker is David Ybarra, has some testimony from the Building Jobs Coalition, followed by Alicia Cordes and Taylor, I'm gonna get this right, Smikharova, which I think I did not get right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Swank. Any questions from members for Ms. Swank? All right, see none. Next is Mr. Ybarra and then Ms. Cordes. Mr. Ybarra.
Good afternoon, Chair
of the committee.
Members of the committee, as indicated, my name is David Ybarra, spelled Y-B-A-R-R-A. I am president of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association, an organization representing 11 local unions and nearly 10,000 men and women working in various piping-related industries throughout our great state. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 724, a bill that extends the sunset on Minnesota's historic tax credit. I'd like to thank Representative Joachim for authoring the bill, and I'd like to thank you all for hearing my testimony today. The State Historic Tax Credit is a great driver of job creation in our state. This credit has created nearly 19,000 jobs since 2011, many of which have benefited the members I represent. These men and women rely on the jobs created through a historic building reuse for their livelihoods and to provide for their families. The construction industry is one of our state's primary industries, and while the industry has fared better than many in the last year due to being deemed essential, there have been challenges. As of October 2020, the construction industry had the highest percentage of continuing unemployment claims among all industries statewide. In addition, many projects in the development phase have been put on hold, while some have been canceled altogether, resulting in concerns about reduced or limited opportunities as we emerge from the pandemic. This past year, the historic tax credit generated $49.8 million in labor income. The money paid to workers sustains local economies, whether it's dining in restaurants, getting a haircut, or other similar endeavors. It is more vital than ever that legislation is advanced that creates and preserves opportunities for the men and women working in the construction industry. The Minnesota Pipe Trades Association strongly supports programs like this that create and maintain positive economic impacts throughout our state. I respectfully ask for your support of House File 724, and I thank you again for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Ibarra? All right, see none. I'd like to now, Alicia Cordes, and then Taylor Smirkarova is on deck. So, Ms. Cordes. Ms. Cordes, you are on mute. Somehow we're not hearing you. No, still not hearing you. So why don't you try this? This was actually happening to me today. Maybe try phoning in, and that might work. I had problems actually with some meetings earlier today. They could see me, they couldn't hear me, which was probably a benefit to that group. But at any rate, try that. I just tried calling in. And so with that, let's go to the next testifier. And Taylor Smirkarova, can pronounce her name correctly here for the committee. If you would do that, and please proceed with your testimony. And then we'll come back to Ms. Cordes.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me today. My name is Taylor Smirkarova, which is a Bulgarian name, many syllables. I appreciate your efforts to pronounce it correctly. That matters more. Thank you so much. So I will give my brief testimony. I'm a project manager at Seward Redesign, one of the few remaining community development corporations whose service area includes East Franklin, East Lake, and Minnehaha Avenue. For the past 50 years, we have provided commercial real estate development, affordable housing, and economic development to our service area, which includes largely BIPOC-owned and women-owned businesses. BIPOC meaning persons of color, Black and brown people, and also Indigenous people. The Twin Cities and Minnesota overall has an incredible program in historic tax credits. It enables developers like Seward Redesign to partner with our community to preserve and reuse community assets. This program creates jobs within our communities, not just for tradespeople, but for local developers, architects, marketers, and more. In fact, 97% of industries in Minnesota have seen some economic growth due to the tax credit. At Seward Redesign, part of our mission is to invest in community sustainability. The historic tax credit helps us achieve those goals. This sustainability, both in the sense of lowering our carbon footprint and in the sense of investing in our communities, their histories, and their futures. Through reusing buildings, we are putting dollars into creating jobs, not only into materials, which is how dollars are spent on a new build. We also reduce our carbon footprint when we reuse buildings because we don't have to take down something that already has a sunk carbon footprint cost and build another carbon intensive project on top of it. There are many projects that have successfully utilized the credit in and around District 65, if we don't move to extend the credit, we will lose opportunity for so many more. Seward Redesign is working on a number of projects that will rely on the credit for us to make the investment in restoring a historic structure. Without the tax credit, our communities will suffer from fewer opportunities and lose valuable investments across the board. I echo my previous folks that have previously stated about how it's very important that this be extended. Without it, many projects will not get off the ground, and a historic structure that has the opportunity to provide a great deal to the community will instead sit vacant and derelict and detract from the community instead. So thank you for your time, and I will sit for questions.
Thank you very much. So any questions for Ms. Samrika Rova? All right, seeing none, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I had my hand up.
I'm sorry, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that testimony, Ms. Mirkarova. Did I get that right, Taylor? Anyway.
Mirkarova.
All right. Anyway, you know, you might be best to answer this question. The tax credit provides a tax incentive or credit to, I'm assuming, capital partners that will fund or participate in rehabilitation of these projects. Could you describe a typical scenario of who or what types of persons or entities are coming forward? Is this individuals who are putting up money, or is it companies or corporations? And what are their obligations to remain an owner or partner in this project? What's the minimum amount of time before there's an exit strategy for these capital investors?
Ms. Samrika Rova.
Thank you for the question. I'll do my best to answer, and hopefully someone might jump in if I misspeak. Generally, the tax credit investors that are involved in these projects are large corporations. They are folks that I believe have an income that they can offset with the credit. And so it could be a very wealthy person as well. Similar to how other tax credit programs are run, this is a sort of form of compromise to allow an exchange. And so an exchange for paying less in credit or in taxes, in exchange for providing this capital upfront at a very crucial part in a project, a significant project can happen. And so it doesn't quite always jive that there are sort of large and or wealthy persons that get the credits, and then the community that surrounds these projects might not be such a large and wealthy person that, you know, gets the credit. But the trade-off is that the project happens, and that is probably one of the more important aspects of the process. It is 7 years is how long their money is involved, and in which case you would refinance and find more permanent financing and continue on. And so it is most important, it is the fact that the money comes in very soon, very early on. And it is that such a large amount is utilized when you have the state and the federal, it makes a great deal of a difference. And so, yes, it's a little awkward that it might not be community folks who are receiving the tax credits, but they are receiving the successful projects, and otherwise they would have a beautiful structure sort of sit there and not add anything. So I hope that answered, and I hope that anyone else does need to jump in and correct, but.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for that explanation. The 7 years is kind of what I was wondering, how long they had to be involved in that. I think it's, you know, when we talk a little bit about tax increment financing, you have to meet the but-for test, and, you know, the project would never happen but for the tax increment financing. This might be a similar situation where a completed rundown building doesn't get the attraction or would be able to secure financing without capital partners to lower the amount of loan proceeds that are needed. I don't believe that the investors or the people doing the tax credits fully fund these projects. There must be some construction or interim financing involved as well. So to that end, I think that's something worthwhile to consider. Just one clarification. Several times it was said that new buildings are predominantly materials and rehabilitation is predominantly labor. Having built structures all around this Twin Cities for the last 35 years, including commercial buildings, I will tell you that materials never exceed more than about 30% of the cost of new structures. Land and other costs are direct inputs, but it is a moot point. But technical in nature, the majority of cost of a building is not built, is not materials. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. All right, Ms. Cordes, I will, if you want to introduce
yourself.
Hello,
are you guys?
We can hear you.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Alicia Cordes, and I'm grateful to be able to speak to you today. I was born and raised in Southwest Minnesota, a tiny town of 600 people called Jasper, located just 4 minutes from South Dakota. I'm the founder and president of Reclaim Community, a nonprofit committed to economic revitalization using citizen engagement, implementing environmentally sustainable, adaptive reuse of historic buildings. The Historic Tax Credit is a crucial reinvestment tool for continuing work like ours to ensure livelihoods and successes of small rural communities. The Jasper School was originally built in 1911. It's a beloved building and former school served Jasper until its closure in 2002. Since then, it was vacant and abandoned and was identified by RESOS as one of the state's 10 most endangered historic places in 2007, adding to our urgency that the building has access to these kinds of rehab finance tools. In addition, since its closure, we've seen the impact cause a decline on our entire Main Street, loss of businesses, and multiple vacancies in other historic Court State Building resources, which are simply just opportunities for new entrepreneurs that are missing now. In 2015, the school went up for auction. Our grassroots community-driven effort to rehabilitate it began, despite the county discussing demolition. In 12 days, a resident-led coalition was able to raise funds for the down payment, and in 6 weeks, we raised $40,000 for its purchase and maintenance, showing that this rehabilitation project matters deeply to our community. Since then, we've raised $148,000 in grants and over $125,000 in private donations to move this forward. The Jasper School Project is working to be the kind of example for other small rural communities that all have buildings that are vacant and declining. The potential to reinvest is unmatched, and it is crucial to community empowerment and economic stability. Greater Minnesota has seen high levels of success with utilizing the state tax credit due to the ability to keep projects local and pay local laborers. We've seen high financial returns on Greater Minnesota projects, with about $1 of invested tax credit generating up to $16 in economic impact in the private sector. Often these tax credit is crucial for getting these projects off the ground. It's been mentioned that piecing together funding is challenging in small towns. We have less residents, less opportunities, and less revenue or access to the sizable capital or development partners that we usually need to fund them. Grants, private donations, economic development loans, tax credits, all of these things are needed. And this impact of this money in Greater Minnesota invests in already built infrastructure, and it's arguably larger even than in other areas that are larger population, because the money goes further, it's recycled and moves through the hands of community in these small, lower income areas. When these restoration projects happen, they impact every neighbor, they impact the community in many ways. This is a powerful environmental resource recycling program. In addition, it can take between 10 to 80 years for a new energy efficient building to overcome, through its efficient operations, the climate change impacts created by its construction. Older retrofitted buildings have 50 to 80 year lifespan versus 30 to 40 in average for new construction. In addition, buildings built prior to the 1960s when retrofitted are more energy efficient than modern counterparts in many cases. This is a project that allows everyone to win economically, environmentally, and socially, and makes possible affordable entrepreneurship, incubation, and housing, and stimulates small business construction trades. On average, for every $1 million invested in historic rehab versus new construction nationwide, $120,000 more stays local. It creates 5 to 9 more construction jobs and 4 to 7 new other jobs. Household incomes in the area go up $107,000. Retail sales increase $108,000 more than new construction. 75% of the economic benefits of rehab stays local, and impacts grow from there over time. The historic tax credit implements a continuing cycle of reinvestment in Greater Minnesota on Greater Minnesota's terms, and we ask you to support this bill to extend the sunset to allow dreams like ours to become a reality. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you so much. Representative Swidzinski has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a question to the testifier. What's going to be in the building again? So you guys you saved the old school building. What's going to be in there?
Ms. Cordes.
Yes, that's an excellent thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair. Yes, that is our plan right now is in the planning stages. So we are working to have a historic structures report done, which is a requirement of grant funding from Minnesota. So that is a huge planning document that is assessing all of the maintenance, the systems, mechanical engineering, all the systems of the building. And once we have that, then we can kind of go forward on a reuse study to decide exactly what's going to be in there. But we know it's going to be a multi-use facility. We have a large auditorium and gymnasium that needs to be used, and there's area sports teams, and it's the largest in our county. It's one of the largest performing spaces. So we're hoping to have arts and cultural programs. We will have a mix of some business incubation spaces as well as some residences.
So Representative Swidzinski.
Mr. Chair, is that so? Your goal is to keep the building's going to be either like a nonprofit or type ownership, or are you looking to sell the building at some point, or what's that process looking like?
Ms. Cordes.
You know, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, as from what I understand, you know, these projects can take on many lives, and it kind of depends on the partners that you end up with. And so we're in that process of sorting out our partners and who our capital investors are going to be eventually and things. And so to have the planning process done and have the actual like construction and working documents done is kind of the stage at which we start finding that after this year. And so we are possibly open to the idea of redeveloping it and maybe eventually selling it. But a lot of these projects require a nonprofit section so that we can access grants for programs. But then we have like a development partner that works on the profit side of the building. So in many of these they're usually public-private partnerships. So it's going to be a complicated situation.
Representative Swidzinski.
Mr. Chair, I'm good. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and testifiers. I read the bill and I thought that credits were available only for the buildings which were on the National Register and were for commercial use. And I wondered why it wouldn't be possible for schools, churches, or libraries to be involved in this as well.
Who wants to take that one? Representative Joachim or Ms. Cordes?
Mr. Chair, I didn't quite hear the end of Representative Sandell's question.
Go ahead, Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Marquardt and Representative Joachim. I wondered if the tax credit could be extended to non-commercial buildings, such as libraries, schools, or churches.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Joachim.
I think I'll pass that over to Ms. Hannifinberg. She's a little more familiar with the, or okay. Ms. Swank.
Ms. Berg, did you say?
Yes. Hi, Chair Marquardt and Representative Sandell. Yes, so I am Erin Hannifinberg.
Please identify,
also,
yeah.
Yeah,
please
also
identify
with
yourself.
And to Representative Sandell's question, the state historic tax credit has to pair with the federal historic tax credit, and it is reserved for properties that are income producing. So, and there's some complicated IRS rules in terms of disallowed uses for nonprofits. So it's possible for some nonprofit entities occasionally to partner with a for-profit entity, as Alicia was describing, but it gets very complicated. And so it is not typically how these projects are structured.
Ms. Berg, would you? I missed your identification.
I apologize. Yes, Erin Hannifinberg with Rethos.
Okay, very good. Representative Sandell.
Thanks very much, Ms. Berg. And I talked a little bit about this earlier, I guess last week, and I've thought a lot about it. I really love the bill, but I understand the complications that provides restrictions. By the way, I have been in the State Theater in Ely, and I saw Legal Eagles with Daryl Hannah and Deborah Winger and loved it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That just goes to show how historic the theater is.
Representative Hertaus. Representative Hertaus, you're muted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should put the button down. Just a comment, Ms. Cortez, I just want to say all the synapses are firing. I've never heard so much content so quickly and so thoroughly in such a short period of time. Thank you for all that data.
Thank you. All right, we've got one more testifier, Sean Smith. If you welcome to the committee and please identify yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Good to see you, and good afternoon to the rest of the Tax Committee. My name is Sean Smith, and I am the chair of NAOP's Public Policy Committee. NAOP is the leading organization for commercial real estate developers and owners. And in this role, I am a proud volunteer serving my industry. I want to thank Representative Joachim, who also represents me in St. Louis Park, for supporting House File 726. NAOP supports the elimination or extension of the historic tax credit sunset. Of the approximately 140 projects that have utilized this credit, I have personally been involved in three of them, and either as the owner or the developer, the seller, or representing a seller. And most of these projects could not have happened if not for this credit. And that is because the cost associated with redeveloping these very important projects across the state are significant. And when paired with the federal credit, the state credit ensures that our historic buildings are being utilized in a way that preserves Minnesota's unique history that's compatible with today's needs. These buildings are renovated with, these buildings that utilize the credit, they're also being upgraded to meet, and they often exceed current building code and energy code standards. And additionally, these renovated buildings provide the enhanced value for the tax capacity for the communities in which they serve also. And the final use of these projects are just as creative and diverse as really where they're located. That is to say that there's no single or limited pool of beneficiaries that are utilizing this credit. They happen all across the state, and they're awarded to many different entities. Given the sunset this year, the time to pass the legislation is now, and we certainly urge you to do so. Thank you again, Representative Joachim, for your leadership, and thank you, Chair, and I can be available for questions.
Before I go to questions, thank you, Mr. Smith. I wanted to mention the revenue estimate for House File 724. So in this 22-23 biennium, it's $19.3 million. And for the 24-25 biennium would be $46.2 million. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to thank Chair Joachim for bringing forward this bill. I am from a couple different small towns in my growing up years, and I have seen how this historic tax credit really does revitalize small communities. So I am a supporter. I just wanted to get on the record that I in general, though, do not support no sunset. I was very impressed with the presentation we had from the group about tax expenditures and how we should be revisiting these every 5 years or so. And so with great support for this particular tax credit, I would prefer that we just put it out there for another 5 years and then gradually move towards reviewing all tax expenditures on a rolling schedule rather than having another one that goes in without a sunset. So I just wanted to offer that comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Robbins. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually was just curious, and maybe this is for Ms. Schill, because I'm trying to just, excuse me, I'm trying to understand the revenue estimate, because this was something that, you know, that's the numbers and the revenue estimate are different than what is in the tax expenditure budget. And so I'm just trying to understand, you know, because in the tax expenditure budget, it has like this, I understand there's some kind of like 5-year sort of window in which maybe different parts of the credit are claimed, or hi, Ms. Templin, maybe. And so just sort of like the numbers in the revenue estimate and the budget look different. So maybe you could explain that to me.
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff, Representative Gomez, thank you for the question. Yes, the revenue estimate is different from the cost estimates in the tax expenditure budget because the revenue estimate is based on the most recent economic forecast. And for this bill, House File 724, it's based on the November forecast. The tax expenditure budget was published last year and is based on an older forecast, probably the November 2019 forecast. So it is older. And then to your question about the tax credit is allocated for a taxpayer that gets the tax credit because of the 2019 tax bill, they are awarded this tax credit over a period of 5 years. And that is because of federal conformity that was enacted in 2019. So for this proposal, if this sunset is removed, the cost of the credit would gradually go up every year to about $35 million, and that cost would be outside the budget window for the cost over 5 years. There's a cumulative revenue impact.
There you go. I hope Representative that answers Gomez.
That's very helpful. So the numbers that are in the tax expenditure budget, are they just like wrong, or is there some amount of this, like, is what we see on the revenue estimate like an additional cost due to lifting the sunset, and these numbers that are in the expenditure budget are sort of like momentum that's in the system because of that taking it over 5 years?
Ms. Temple.
That makes sense?
I think so. Representative Marquardt, Representative Gomez, again, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. Yes, the tax expenditure budget, the cost that you see or the revenue impact that you see for the historic tax credit is the estimated current law cost of the program at that point of time when the expenditure budget was published. The amounts that you see in the revenue estimate reflect the additional cost with the extension of the program. And the cost is, again, it is shown, the cost gradually increases throughout the budget window because of how the credits are allocated over 5 years.
Yeah, so Ms. Templin, there are, you know, projects being paid out right now that would show up in a tax expenditure study that are not included in these new dollars or with this new House File 724. That would not be included in the revenue estimate here.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. The revenue estimate only reflects the cost of the new projects because of the extension as proposed in the bill. The additional.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Representative Gomez?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess just a quick kind of comment about this. Honestly, I kind of have a hard time with this bill because, you know, I mean, just personally, like, I love anachronistic old things. I love old construction. I love craftsmanship. I have a great deep appreciation for it. You know, according to the tax expenditure budget, this is $63 million in 2021, right, that we spend on this bill. And I'm just so appreciative, you know, much like Representative Robbins sort of identified, you know, this kind of like thinking about tax expenditures as direct appropriations, which is what our this 2011 study and kind of this body of work that we've undertaken as a committee this year is pointing us toward. Like, if we were talking about a direct appropriation, would we spend $63 million on this? We spend $100 million on housing infrastructure bonds to create affordable housing in across the state of Minnesota. You know, in our last bonding budget, that's what we had. You know, the last time that we heard this bill, I can't remember if it was, if we had a hearing on it either in 19 or 20. I feel like it was last year in 20 before, in the before times. And at that point, it was interesting because almost every testifier talked about affordable housing and about how this is an important tool for affordable housing. And I haven't heard that at all today. And in the interim, I will tell you what's happened with the historic tax credit in an affordable housing project that's not in my district, but it's in Minneapolis, the veterans home. They had to get, now it's Fort Snelling, it's historic property. I think there is like a really strong argument for maintaining it, but it's turned into this like, you know, affordable housing, right? It's 60% AMI, it's $47,000 a year. The one bedroom apartments will be around 1200, two bedroom apartments will be around 14 or 15, which is honestly sort of market rate in Minneapolis. But this is a project that where each unit of quote unquote affordable housing will cost $900,000 to develop. And they had to craft a special law in 2018 because there's usually a cap on per unit sort of support for affordable housing through the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Because of the special law, they got this dispensation. And now we're basically, like, there's an opportunity cost to all of these things. So we're spending $900,000 on these units each, on these units of affordable housing. I mean, think about it. That's three times the cost of, like, straight up building a brand new house, single family freestanding home. And, you know, that just boiled the blood of people in my community, I have to say, who are really struggling with this affordable housing issue. And so, you know, again, I guess I'm just like, we have to think about every single one of these things. Is this what we would do if we had 63 mil to spend to create whatever the intent of this is, to create jobs, to create housing, to revitalize downtowns? Is this the way that we'd spend it? So, like I said, I mean, I have a hard time with it. I just wanted to kind of make those comments. I appreciate it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Joaquim, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I support it and proud to be a co-sponsor of it. I do want to say that my colleague, Representative Gomez, made a very good comment where she said that we should view tax expenditures as direct appropriations. That is a wise course of action for members to when they're examining tax policy. I do reach a little different conclusion than her on that, but I do think it's appropriate that people recognize that. With regards to this bill, I have some questions regarding the revenue note. First of all, and this could be for Ms. Templin or any nonpartisan researcher, it says that for all tax payments, tax year impacts are allocated 30%, 70% in fiscal years. And I'm wondering if someone can explain to me why that split of 30-70.
Ms. Templin.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. All corporate tax estimates after the first year are allocated 30% of the tax year cost goes in the first fiscal year, and 70%, it's this 30-70 split, this allocation of the cost between the current fiscal year and the current tax year and the previous tax year. And I believe the reason for that allocation is because of the way the tax returns are remitted to the state.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
And Ms. Templin, so like, for example, quarterly tax payments, in other words, I'm trying to think of what payment schedule we have in Minnesota that would be 30% the first 6 months, or I'm trying to, you understand the question I'm asking. I'm trying to think of something where we have a payment schedule that would break down 30-70.
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, I think there are many tax types, you know, like for sales tax, there's monthly, for income tax, there's estimated, and for corporate taxes, I think I will check with Mr. I think we'll check with House Research to see if they have information about the return for corporate taxes and the timing. But if you, the all of the estimates for corporate income tax are distributed 30% and 70%, and that is because of the tax year and the remittance of the tax.
Okay.
So, Ms. Templin, thank you. And what we'll do is for the next meeting, we'll get let's get an explanation on that.
Sounds good. And Mr. Chairman, if I could ask one more follow-up question. This may be for the Department of Revenue as opposed to Ms. Templin, but we always have these arguments about static versus dynamic scoring. So in this case, we do see estimates of what the amount of the credit given would go up as we, you know, turn this credit back on after the end of this fiscal year. But I'm wondering if built into this assumption are assumptions that there would in fact be more historic projects taking place. And is that built into the assumption, or is this a static model?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, again, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. The revenue estimate, they build in that $35 million will be spent per fiscal year or tax year with the repeal of the sunset. There is not an estimate of how many projects will be funded. Instead, there is a dollar amount. And the dollar amount is estimated based on an averaging over 4 years from previous years, the experience that the Department of Revenue has seen for these tax credits.
So it sounds to me, Ms. Templin, that would be a static, revenue note. So.
Correct, Mr. Chair, yeah. Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal. Yes. It would be a static. The economic impact reports that the historic credit is required to annually publish does contain information about jobs produced or an estimate of jobs produced and sales tax revenue and income tax revenue generated because of the credit.
And
Representative Garofalo, thank you, Ms. Templin.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think that certainly, in this whole issue of dynamic and static scoring, we could have an entire committee hearing on that. But I do think as members are formulating their opinions on this bill, and you, Mr. Chairman, is I recognize those are going to be the numbers that you have to plug into your spreadsheets to account for things. But in the reality, in the real world, we do know that this tax credit will allow for more projects to take place, that we'll see fewer buildings destroyed, we'll have more buildings restored, and that will have an overall positive economic benefit. It will not show up in our spreadsheets, but in the real world, that is something that will take place. So again, I want to thank the author for bringing this bill forward. I'm happy to co-sponsor it. And it's something that we need to do a better job of, is making sure that we're preserving our historic buildings and counterbalancing what are currently regulatory preferences to tear everything down and build ugly suburban strip malls. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Hertaus, did you have your hand up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I did. And part of my question was answered just in the summation of this last one. But I think too often we focus on the economic cost of a program. We've heard multiple testimonials on this subject, this bill today, of the economic impact. And we need to make sure that we're offsetting not only future jobs and projected income tax and sales tax revenues from that. So I concur with everything that's been said here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. And I mean, it's just like the spending, both in the tax policy and the spending area, it's static. They don't kind of assume what new spending might do either. So it kind of
Chair.
Both ways in that. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you. I was trying to find out where you raise your hand at. I just can't find that right now, so I just thought I'd come in.
That worked great. Just like you shot a double leg takedown there just all of a sudden. Very good.
But to thank you, Representative Joachim for bringing this forward. But I do think we should probably keep that sunset, because I think it's good, you know, every 5 years or so to take a look what's out there for the legislature to kind of have an umbrella approach of what's going on out there. So, you know, I do think the sunset is a good idea to keep it. So, but I do support what we're trying to do around the state with our valuable structures that we have, historic structures. So thank you.
You bet. Thank you. I see no further hands, and anyone else care to testify that's on our meeting. I know prior to meetings, information is sent out as to how the public can participate too, but seeing none, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, actually, I sit in the over 100-year-old building as I speak. You can probably see the tin ceilings up on the top. But anyway, a question, maybe I think it was answered in the testimony, but I wanted to make sure. Are the funds for the tax expenditure, are they for any building that's not, they don't have to be on the National Historic Preservation System, is that correct, on commercial buildings?
Ms. Berg, I'll go to Ms. Berg with that.
Yes, hi, Mr. Chair. Erin Hannafin-Berg with Rethos. To Mr. or Representative McDonald's question, the buildings do need to be listed in the National Register of Historic Places and then used for income-producing purposes. And so that meets the federal criteria or qualifications, and that is what our state credit is based on.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good. And then just the question would be, but for, in regards to Representative Gomez's important comments, that the appropriations, the credit would not be used but for the renovation of the buildings, correct?
Ms. Berg.
Yeah, Representative McDonald. Yes, I mean, it must be used for the rehabilitation of the building and only for qualified rehabilitation expenses. And most developers have found that without the access to the state historic tax credit, they just can't make the numbers work with the federal credit alone. So as I believe Ms. Swank had spoken earlier, that we saw 2 to 3 projects a year statewide using the federal historic tax credit alone. And once the state historic tax credit was enacted, that jumped up to about 10 to 12 projects a year.
But just to be clear, there's not a but-for criteria in this legislation like there is for tax increment financing law. So it's, as long as it meets the requirement, there's not a but-for test technically. So
yes,
like you would under TIF law.
Chair Markork, yes, that's correct. There is no actual but-for test that must be demonstrated.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, just in closing then, I do support the bill and I support the project and the program that has been very helpful in smaller communities and all communities throughout the state. I do think it may be beneficial for it not to be permanent, but for us to frequently revisit this particular piece of legislation when it sunsets. So I do would have probably agree with Representative Detmer in having a sunset and not a permanent, but I'm listening.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Representative Joachim, closing comments, and then I'll ask you to renew your motion.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for your attention, your questions, and the discussion. As you've heard in the testimony, the historic tax credit not only plays an important role in the history of our communities, but in their economies as well. I know that the committee has been having an even more extensive discussion around taxed expenditures, and I absolutely do welcome that. And I also appreciate the comments about repeal versus keeping some sort of sunset on. I would caution 5 years would be pretty short with the span of what's required in the projects, and also for the fact that there's like a 7-year window where folks have to be involved too. So definitely open to talking about that after talking with the advocates. And I do believe expenditures have to be considered as direct appropriations too in some senses. And I believe that the historic tax credit has had a very proven track record of being well worth the investment. So I would love to have your support on this bill going forward, and my door is always open. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Thank you very much, Chair Joachim, and you renew your
motion. Yes. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Joachim renews her motion to lay over House File 724 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you, everyone. We're now going to move to House File 921. That is Representative Baker is at the committee. Would someone like to move that for the committee?
Move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hertaus moves House File 921 be laid over for possible inclusion in the House omnibus tax bill. Representative Baker, welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here, and thank you for bringing this important bill forward.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much for allowing us to talk about this important bill. I've got a couple of ideas that we're working on this year to really help our hospitality industry that's been just devastated, as so many of you know, just looking at the headlines with our past 11, 12 months, we could have never imagined this. What this bill does today, members, we've got a couple of different ideas that do small steps that make our industry better for the long haul so that we don't continue to hear how the restaurant industry is such a high probability of failure early on when you start opening up these dream jobs and you've always wanted to open up an eatery or try your culinary skills at something. And these little things that we can do in this committee will mean a lot to folks down the road. Just generally, Mr. Chair, what this does, and I'm going to turn this over to our testifiers, this bill will allow a tax exemption, a sales tax exemption on any purchases while you're creating products and food in a kitchen, just like you are seeing now in manufacturing opportunities and things like that. This has been tried before. This year especially, we need to have sales tax exemption when, again, a restaurant operator like myself in the past would buy a new oven, a new deep fryer, a new reach-in cooler, stainless steel that is so expensive in our kitchens. We need to keep those updated, and we need to reinvest in these things. The money that could be saved by this could actually just get turned over, having better quality food and more money for other things in our operation. And also, members, this also includes a clawback a little bit for the beginning of March 1st of 2020. So restaurants that spent money during the COVID expansion for plexiglass, for things related to health metrics to keep our customers safe, would be able to apply for a refund during that period of time. That is an open window for about a little less than 2 years. So through this year, 2021, if we're continuing to spend money, those sales tax exemptions would apply as well that maybe have already been purchased by these operations. So that's generally what this is. And my final comment is we've got a little more tweaking to do on this bill. As you all know, we got really kind of backlogged with bills in the revisor's office. We've got to work on some amendments and some clarity for what the exemptions will be with the Department of Revenue. So I'm coming to you, Mr. Chair, with a real commitment to later this week, we're going to get that clarified to you so we have, a better and more clear fiscal note on this is what it's going to cost. We want to make sure we get more details, and so we'll be working with the Department of Revenue and stakeholders as we move this bill along. So I'm committed to that, Mr. Chair, and with that, I'll allow you to turn it over to my testifiers and we stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Baker. And first testifier is Ben Wagsland, and then we have Eric Forsberg. Mr. Wagsland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members and staff. My name is Ben Wagsland. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Hospitality Minnesota. We represent Minnesota's restaurants and other hospitality businesses. Just by way of background, Minnesota state law currently provides sales tax exemptions for manufacturing equipment used to produce products that are then resold and taxed at the point of sale. And our members, restaurants, manufacture meals, which are then sold to the customer and taxed at the point of sale. My understanding of the history of this is that in the early 90s, in order to address a budget crisis, restaurant equipment was excluded at that point from the capital equipment sales tax exemption. There really wasn't any tax policy reason for that change. It was to try to address the budget. Our understanding is that food service businesses are really the only category of manufacturers required to pay the sales tax on their equipment purchases. So this is a matter of fairness, and we think it's smart policy for the state to help this industry. As Representative Baker said, the bill does two things. It would help restaurants now by helping them have a sales tax exemption from equipment purchases that they had to make here to respond to COVID during the crisis, things like barriers or some things dealing with PPE or air quality or things of that nature. But it also is going to help with the recovery for this industry, which is severely needed in that by carving out a sales tax exemption for these equipment purchases, which are necessary for these businesses, it's going to help them recover faster. And it's one tool in the toolbox that you can use. I know I've already testified in front of this committee before about the pain in this industry. I know y'all know it well, but I'm going to leave you with two stats that I think sum up the need for this industry. Number one, according to a Federal Reserve survey that we did with the Fed here in December, 50% of restaurants are on the verge of financial collapse here in Minnesota. And we've lost 120,000 jobs in the last year in the hospitality sector, the vast majority of those in restaurants. Normally, you know, we're one in 10 jobs in Minnesota. So it's critical that we recover and get those jobs back. These businesses have been, you know, either closed or significantly hampered in revenue all year by COVID. But the bills have continued to pile up, whether that's rent or mortgage or utilities, insurance, vendors, taxes, none of those have stopped. And so these folks have done everything that they can and within their ability to help keep their fellow Minnesotans safe. And now, as we try to recover, they're going to be digging out from a really deep hole. And if you talk to them, they'll tell you that that they really need all of our help to do that. And this is really, we think, unfortunately, is going to be a multi-year recovery. So this bill can be one tool that will help with that. Restaurants need to spend thousands of dollars per year in equipment just to maintain their business. This is not even including expansions or renovations. And we feel that this manufacturing equipment should not be taxed just like it's not in other industries. So I'll leave it there. I'm open for questions after the other testifiers, but thank you, Mr. Chair, members and staff for letting me talk to you today.
Mr. Wagsland, thank you so much. Any questions for Mr. Wagsland? All right, thank you. Mr. Forsberg and then Mr. Bowen to follow.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, sorry, I wasn't quite quick enough in hitting the hand. I have a question for the last testifier from Hospitality Minnesota. Maybe if he is familiar with the suit that the Leon Chins filed against Minnesota a number of years ago, maybe he could share that with the committee.
Mr. Wagsland.
I am not familiar with that exact lawsuit, but I'm happy to get back to you, Representative McDonald.
Okay.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, then if I could briefly just share. A number of years ago, Leon Chins did sue the state of Minnesota, saying that they are a manufacturing company, they manufacture food. Since many of our manufacturers in our state are tax exempt on their capital improvements, including farms and many manufacturers. So Leon Chins did file a lawsuit against the state of Minnesota, stating that they do manufacture food. Guess what? They won the case. So the law should have been changed many years ago. I thank Representative Baker for bringing this bill forward. I had the bill a couple of years ago and will continue to support it. It's the least we could do in this very hard economic times. But just remember, the lawsuit was filed, they won. Yet the state of Minnesota dug their feet in the ground and at that time didn't change the law. So they are a manufacturing company. They should have the same benefits that all the other manufacturers that we say is important to us in the state of Minnesota that provide jobs and manufacture important things such as good food for our state. That's my editorial for today.
Thank you very much. We're going to move to Mr. Forsberg. Welcome
to
the committee.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for allowing me to testify today. My name is Eric Forsberg. I'm a restaurateur in mostly downtown Minneapolis, as well as some in greater Minnesota, in the Rogers area in particular. I own Devil's Advocate, Dan Kelly's, Eric the Red in downtown Minneapolis, and represent Broadway Pizza with Rogers. So this has been an ongoing, as you've heard, subject we've dealt with for a number of years. And obviously none of us really expected to have happen what has happened in this last year. We've spent, to just put some hard numbers to it for you. Earlier on, we invested in a lot of the PPP or the PPE, excuse me, equipment to try and reopen our restaurants as soon as we could, as soon as there were some restrictions lifted in June. For each restaurant, on average, we were spending about $1,800 in regular just barriers and equipment to try and refurb our restaurants. In addition, we put in ionizers, which on an average are about $10,000 each. Now, this is over and above what we spend for the manufacturing of our products, so understand that. That comes to an average of for my stores across the board, about $6,000 in just sales tax revenue that we were spending to get the three stores up and running downtown. So, and to work to the input objects, again, a little bit of education piece here is think of an oven that we would bake bread in to make sandwiches. If I put that in my restaurant and I spend $10,000 in an oven, which I have to repurchase typically every 3 to 5 years, mind you, I'm going to pay sales tax for downtown is 8.025%. If I were to just go to the bay next door in my restaurant and open a bakery that makes bread, I can buy that same oven and I'm sales tax exempt. So understanding that restaurants actually are manufacturing facilities and that we take a raw material and we produce a finished good and we sell it with a taxable item to the end user, it's just done in a very different environment because it's a very fast-paced environment. We're doing it in 20 minutes versus doing it over the course of days or weeks or months in some cases. So understanding again, as you've heard some people say, this isn't the silver bullet that's going to save my industry by any means. But it is a brick in the road to recovery. And that road to recovery, we really do predict to be 3 to 5 years. Also understanding being in downtown Minneapolis with restrictions as well as some of the social unrest we've had. You know, I've had three of my restaurants that were vandalized and or looted. So much of that equipment that I've already purchased once, I actually have to repurchase again because much of it was damaged beyond the point of repair. And we have to make it from scratch again in order to reopen. We've not reopened downtown since last year. And we hope to reopen now with restrictions lifted. And hopefully we're starting to see more traffic in the downtown area again. Sometime soon, hopefully sooner than later, but it is, it would be using something like this as, like I said, a brick on the path to recovery matters. It's not the whole road, but it is definitely a part of it. And I think it's not only fair, it's helpful to my industry. So thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I'm open to any questions.
Mr. Forsberg, thank you so much. Any questions? If not, Mr. Bone. Mr. Bone, I think you're muted still. If you welcome,
of course, to
the community,
yeah, thanks.
Identify yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for directing me how to use Zoom. My name is Tony Bowen. I'm the Director of Operations for Grandma's Restaurant Company. This year marks our 45th year in business that began in Canal Park here in Duluth, Minnesota. And we have had a pretty good run. And through those years, we've employed tens of thousands of employees. From high school kids to single moms to grandparents. And many have stuck with us, like myself. I'm in my 35th year, having started as a busboy. And many have moved on to make their marks in the world in other endeavors. That said, we're all one family, or grammily, and we share many memories and traditions. Before 2020, we employed 400 to 600 team members who we hope to continue those traditions and carry forward fond memories. Unfortunately, this past year, we lost many employees as we were forced to close our doors, and our customers have not quite felt ready for the dining out experience within our four walls completely yet. It's going to take a lot of work for us to claw back and adapt to the new realities of guest expectations for dining out. It's going to come with tremendous cost to infrastructure, menu redevelopment, and efficiency standards. As it stands, pre-pandemic, looking back the last 10 years, and just simply keeping up with replacing equipment, we spend about $10,000 per year per store on those expenditures. And we anticipate much larger needs as we move forward to adapt to the new world. While Representative Baker's bill may not be the be-all end-all solution, it certainly will be quite helpful as we begin to dig out and start over, because that's what we're doing. That's what all restaurateurs are doing. I'm asking you to get us back to where we used to be. And back to where all other manufacturers of consumer goods are, and reinstate the tax exemption on the purchase of equipment restaurants use to manufacture food and drinks for our guests, who are in turn, as you know, taxed once again you know, and the state, city, and county, you know, already get 11.8% on our food purchases and 13.58% on liquor purchases here in Duluth. So we're contributing. Representative Baker for bringing this forward. And I want to thank you for allowing me to speak with you and hope to see you all up in Duluth sometime this summer.
Mr. Bowen, thank you so much for your testimony. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Baker. I know how hard you're working on this and all the other issues. So thank you for bringing this bill forward, for working with the hospitality industry. And I just wanted to greet Mr. Forsberg. I have Rogers in my district, and the Broadway Pizza is a staple of gathering in our community and great food as always. So nice to see you in committee, sir.
Thank you very much, Representative Robbins. All right, move to the next testifier, Beth Gadoon. Ms. Gadoon, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Gadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Our top goal for this legislative session is economic recovery, and we are in support of Representative Baker's bill, as we believe this is a great way to help some of the hardest hit industries by providing this immediate tax relief on the sales tax purchases they've already made, that they may just prevent the spread of COVID-19 and help keep their businesses open, and also providing ongoing tax relief by reducing their costs when they're upgrading and investing in their Minnesota operations. This builds on good tax policy, as was mentioned, that's been supported on a strong bipartisan basis in the past to eliminate the sales tax on business inputs with sales tax exemption on their capital equipment. When businesses pay taxes on their input, the cost of production rises and those costs get built into the price of the product. This results in tax pyramiding, and the tax is assessed multiple times during the production cycle, and that ultimately gets passed along to the consumer. So we really urge your support of this hard-hit industry, and I'll be happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gadoon. And before we move to questions and comments for Representative Baker or others, just the revenue estimate, what we have right now, and I know Representative Baker has said there's some tweaks to be made, and we still have time to do that, certainly. But right now, the revenue note is $26.5 million in this biennium and $17.0 million into the next biennium. So, members, questions for the author of the bill, Representative Baker? Okay, I don't see any. Representative Baker.
Again, Mr. Chair and members, I know that this tax committee always has to deal with a whole bunch of priorities that comes down to really at the end of the day, where these all land. And I just really implore and really ask this committee and the chair and leadership to look hard at this bill. This is the year of any years to try to make this one a real high priority for our industry. Again, there's some really good logic to why we are asking for this ask today. Again, Mr. Chair, I'm gonna get the amendment right. I'll be meeting with the Department of Revenue to get the fiscal thing very tweaked up and very firmed up so we know what this is gonna look like. I can't tell you enough how much I've appreciated working with Hospitality Minnesota and others that are working on the roadmap to recovery. Other committees are working hard to address the whole business climate here in Minnesota. And I think we all hope we're certainly on the back end of a horrible year, and we want to get there. We've got some really good ideas that I think are close to getting us out of this situation, so our business people can be working hard and fighting back like they do so well in our industry. You know, seeing Mr. Forsberg and Mr. Bowen from those operations, and again having a restaurant myself for 18 years, I know the challenges of this thing. And this is a very important bill that will go on for a very, very, very long time, and this is what we need to do. So I just can't thank you enough. And again, I want to thank my colleague, Representative McDonald, for carrying this bill in the past. I hope I can get across the finish line. It's one more thing I can spike the ball in front of him with. If this happens to work out this year, I always like to get that in with with Representative McDonald if I can. So, Mr. Chair, thank you once again.
Representative Baker, you used Representative McDonald's name, and I know he had his hand up earlier. So, Representative McDonald. Oh, you are muted, Representative McDonald.
Oh, that doesn't happen much.
I said, whoops, you did it again, Representative Baker. Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, good job. Thank you, Representative Baker, for bringing this forward. And Mr. Chair, I certainly will hope that we can keep this in or get this into the omnibus tax bill for some relief for our restauranteurs. But a quick question, Winston, quiet. Sorry, my dog. Quick question for Representative Baker. In the bill that I had last year, we had crafted it with also a portion of the bill that would allow restaurants not to have to pay sales tax on items that they give their employees when they have purchased food and or even given food or beverages, they have to pay sales tax on that. So would you consider an amendment next time you bring the bill forward?
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I'd be happy to look at that. That's a real cost again to businesses. If we could save them a few bucks that way, I would love an opportunity to work with you on an amendment that we're going to continue to work on, obviously, with this bill as well. So I would wholeheartedly welcome a friendly amendment like that, Representative McDonald. Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Representative Baker. We'll do that. We'll work on that because real quickly, so a restaurant oftentimes will give their employees some discounted food or even some free food and beverages, and yet they have to still pay sales tax on that, even though they gave it away. Now, it's a small percentage, certainly, but it's kind of a slap in the face in a way. If you think about it, that here they're giving away their food for their hardworking employees, and yet they still have to pay sales tax. So I look forward to bringing that amendment to the bill and working with you on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other comments? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I learned how to put my hand up, I guess. But thank you, Representative Baker. This may be a question for Mr. Chair. A bill like this, can this ever be put on a fast track? We know what's going on with that restaurant industry, and I know it's going to be put in an omnibus bill. Can we do something like this on a fast track? That's just my question.
So, well, thank you, Representative Detmer. We are going to be, I know, in Tax Committee looking at a number of items because we have heard from a number of members and Mr. Wogsland and others from the hospitality industry that we know the hospitality and leisure industry has probably been hit the hardest. And so there's probably a number of things that we're going to be looking at. So, I mean, technically, could it be done? Realistically, if you're going to try to look at how you're going to try to put a package together, that would lend itself for being part of the omnibus bill at the end.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Baker, anything further you'd like to conclude with?
Just a big thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for listening to our story, and I look forward to another visit maybe in the next few weeks. Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you so much. And Representative Hertaus renews his motion to lay over House File 921 for possible inclusion into the House Tax Omnibus Bill.
No,
so
you
thank
just...
you very much, Representative Baker. Thank you, Representative Hertaus.
No, I was going to say thank you for renewing my motion.
That's right. Very good. So members, we have no meeting tomorrow, and then we come back on Thursday. We will hear four bills, and other than that, there's nothing else. Thank you for these are two important bills we heard today, and I appreciate all the testimony and the questions and the thoughtful approach that members take. So members, with that, the Tax Committee is adjourned.